Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio. Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, December the 20th, 2018. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael. Well, not sure what's going on there. So I'll just say if you're new to the show. Oh, there he is.
I'm here, sweetie. My mute button just escaped me and all the screens on my phone. So welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here as we move forward and hold the space for the delivery of forgiveness, real, true Aramaic forgiveness to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Our Course in Miracles lesson today is lesson 354, and we've been talking about this mind that is in us that was also in the one named Yeshua. The Greeks made the error of putting the name of the mind that he lived into combination with his proper name, or at least what the Greeks called his proper name. It's actually not his name, and putting it together as a name. It really isn't a name. That word Christ is the name of an office in Aramaic. And if I ran for mayor and I won the office of mayor, you would call me perhaps Mayor Michael. But that wouldn't mean that mayor was my name. So in the same way, each of us, if you listen to Paul 2,000 years ago, he talks about this mind in you. It's your link, it's your connection. What Yeshua is working to do is to bring each of us into alignment with that mind that he aligned with, which was quite literally the mind of love, the mind of the Creator. That is our birthright to live in. So this lesson 354, we stand together in that mind, and I in serenity and certainty of purpose. And in him is his Creator, as he is in me. So we're acknowledging, you know, I love how physics has arrived kind of in some cases through the back door of where theology was, or what was called theology thousands of years ago. If we listen to Einstein, he says, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. So just the title of this lesson 354 links it all together, and in essence and explains the connectedness and the oneness of it all. And of course we have a whole language based in separation, so that's not necessarily an easy thing to do. So my oneness with the Christ, with this mind of love in me, establishes me as the offspring of the Creator. Actually, my creation established me. It is my oneness with that mind that keeps me there. And that state of being, that eternal aspect of our being, which, you know, from the perspective of a limited two-dimensional mind, is hard to comprehend. But when you add a broader perspective, a broader view, then you get to see something different. A whole different conclusion is inevitable as you enlarge your perspective. And I've told the story in the past of, you know, imagine that I'm walking down the street and I see somebody across the road, this guy slapping this girl across the face. And I go rushing over and grabbing him by the scruff of the neck and pulling away. He said, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. I was just trying to take her out of an epileptic fit. And what happens now that I have a new piece of information? All of a sudden, the guy that looked like the bad guy is all of a sudden the hero and the savior. Of course, when she comes out of her shocked and pained state, she says, yes, I was going into a seizure because he tried to rape me. Now, all of a sudden, he becomes the bad guy again. At what point do we know all of the connectedness? So it is recognizing that this oneness is incomprehensible to the mind with its little tiny self perspective. So the connectedness with this oneness puts me beyond the reach of time, free of every law but the law of love. And to recognize, you know, we've talked over and over and over again of Yeshua's statement where he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. And that makes no sense from the perspective of me, I, me, want, one, I, me. That makes no sense. I'm going to live by dying. But when you recognize that there is this non-being self, this self that's been formulated out of generations of thoughts based in hostility or fear, and forms this pretend self that looks like it's got life but has no life at all. It's all kinds of opinions, all kinds of judgments, all kinds of rage, all kinds of pain. To recognize I have that self is not who I am. So I have no self except that Christ in me, that mind of oneness, that mind of connectedness to love. I have no purpose but that purpose. And that mind is a reflection of our Creator. Thus must I be one with you as well as Him. So we're back to this Einsteinian idea of, if you think you're separate, you're living in an optical illusion. Yes, our eye has been trained to see separateness, so we see the world as though it's true, and it's a lie. And when we see the world as separate, we see that way because we've been given thoughts of separation. And those thoughts of separation, you know, it's just like voting. They say voting has consequences. Thoughts have consequences. And the consequences are feelings. If you're not feeling that oneness, if you can't tap into that oneness, it's because you have thoughts that separate you. So who is this Christ except the offspring of the Creator and remains as you created him? What am I except that in me? So this whole idea of the Course is to remember. One of the earlier lessons, let me remember I am one with love. Serenity to my brothers and sisters who are one with me. To offer that state of serenity, that state of support, is a place that can only come from oneness. And if we're not feeling that, then that's our next piece of forgiveness work. And remember that forgiveness has nothing to do with, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. Forgiveness is the tool with which I remove the hostilities, the fears, the rages, the guilt, the griefs of the generations, and return to the truth of who I am. And so that's our Course in Miracles lesson today, 354. Gee, we get up to 365, and we've completed a year. That's pretty awesome. And so, Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us today?
He is, and he's on.
Well, let's say hello to the young man. How are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Awesome. What's on your mind today? What do you have to share with us?
Well, I was not able to get that interview
link
or whatever to play. It just
That's
keeps
weird.
Looping in this very short news cycle about the economy and then advertisements. So, but
I've been able to play it, so I'll see if I can. There's a link for me to download it. I'll try the download button and see, and see if that takes me there.
But you were saying something about how the definition that you came up with was baffling to people.
That was the feedback on the show last night. Yeah, it was a show out in California that I was doing. And it just came back, well, but what does that mean? Well, what does that mean? Tell me again, what does that mean? It's kind of interesting, especially in the context
Which definition were you trying to use?
I used the definition. Let me get back to my notes here. I actually used it, and then I shortened it a little bit. And then shortened it a little bit more, as we talked about it. That's why I sent you the link to the show, but I'll see if I can download it. So I started out with true Aramaic forgiveness is a self-initiated tool which empowers me to be restored to love and remove any form of suffering, pain, fear, and or hostility I experience in response to what's going on around or within me. So that's where I started. I then shortened it, and I just said, you know, I used the first part of it, any form of suffering, pain, fear, or hostility. And then I shortened it again, and I left out the self-initiated. I just made it true Aramaic forgiveness is a tool which empowers me to be restored to love and remove any form of suffering, pain, fear, and or hostility. Which is kind of where I see us perhaps hanging with it now. But we'll see. That's where I ended up, and I'll see if I can get that downloaded and sent to you so you can give it a listen.
Okay, well, the...
I was kind of shocked at the response to it, the repeated asking, well, what does that mean? What is it? So.
Well, I hearken back to one of the conversations where I think you said something to the effect of you want something that will cut through the need to build brain cells and will be instantly recognizable. And my response when you said that was, I don't think that's possible. I think that the core of what you're teaching is that the words don't have any meaning, only the brain cells of the person who hears them hold the meaning. And so it's going to have to be a process of building experiences, building various definitions, and there's not going to be a way to, with a statement, cut through all of my history and conditioning. And I love your example of the lines on the board. What might this be? Oh, eventually, oh, that might be a two-door igloo. And then you say,
right.
What kind of brain cells, what kind of content in brain cells, what kind of life experiences would I have to build into somebody from Central American jungle to get them to understand this thing that you've only known as water that flows can actually get frozen, fall through the air, compact into a solid material that you can carve up and build a house out of. So, you know, I think the plan, the target that you set for yourself might not be so realistic to say, I'm going to have one statement that's going to instantly undo the old conditioning and build new brain cells for people to understand this definition.
Yep, we can undo our best.
Yeah. And I think it's a good thing to try and get it simplified and to work with it and to get feedback from audiences like on the internet show and on your radio shows when you appear on them, because I think we can get closer. And then, you know, probably even craft the steps that will make it, you know, easier. What's the quote that you like to see, you know, bit by bit, strength to strength, weakness to weakness?
Here a little, there a little, with stammering lips and another tongue will I speak to you.
Yep. So I look forward to seeing how that continues to grow. And I had done a little bouncing things back and forth and writing some of the things that you had sent, writing them out and trying to make them a little with my terminology, and I came up with forgiveness is a process I use to remove any energies I experience in my mind or body which result in pain or fear. And then the next sentence, if you want to add to that, says, when this is done correctly, it allows me to be easily aware of my true nature as love.
That's where we'd be heading.
Yep.
So it's good. It's good to have the conversation going.
It is indeed. And people keep doing the work and hopefully building more and more brain cells for it. And again, we have the support group tonight that people can tap into if they want to and join us from wherever they are through Zoom. And I'd be happy to have people join us tonight at 6:30 to 9 Central Time. And you can get the information on doing that through my website at ch4cs.com. And just click on the link that says support groups. And then hopefully somebody will raise a hand and spark some conversation.
Why don't you repeat that once more, Tim?
My website is C as in cat, H as in hat, the number 4, C as in cat, S as in Sam.com. And then just click on the tab that says support groups.
And
I just wanted to say before I... I just wanted to say before I give up the floor, it's 6:30 to 9 Central Time.
Cool.
And I just wanted to say before I give up the floor that I was just so thrilled to hear about the testimonials yesterday from different people, including Susan Bingham. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing to see the results that direct application of the tools can have in people's lives. So
cool.
Thank you to everybody who uses the tools.
Cool. I just went back while we were talking, Tim, and I went to the link to the broader podcast page on that station. They have hundreds and hundreds of different shows. And the show that I was interviewed on, it's one I've actually been doing fairly regularly for the last several years with Dr. Donald Jolly out in California. But the first two shows, when you go to it, the first two shows I did last week and this week, so those two links should give you this week's show and last week's show if you want to listen to it. So, and I think the conversation about forgiveness is probably about 15 minutes or so in. I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but it'd be there.
Michael, if you'll send those links to me, I can put them in the notes for today as well. And we do have a hand.
Okay. Great. Well, let's say hello.
All right. Area code 610, you are on the air.
Okay. I'm jumping right in on this conversation about, this is Susan
All
from
right.
Pennsylvania. Sorry. Hi.
Welcome, young lady.
Hi. Thank you. Michael, I can see why people were scratching their heads and bugging you, because you're already there, and I don't know how short you can make this little statement about forgiveness, because there are two elements that people have to know. In my experience, they have to know their basic original innocence, and that applies to themselves and everyone else, number one. Number two, they have to understand that they choose, maybe unconsciously, but they choose their reactions to everything that happens to them. I'm only parroting back what you've taught me. I'll give you a great example about the second point. My son and I were talking about his feelings of anxiety about going to work, and he says it's always the worst on Monday mornings. And I said, well, okay, Monday, what's about Monday? And he said, well, it's Monday, you know. And I said, Monday isn't doing it to you. What if you transferred all of your patients that come on Monday to Saturday? And he stopped and he said, you know, Saturday is just a different kind of day. I wouldn't mind it. And I said, do you realize you've just told me that you've fabricated your reaction. You've built up your reaction. You've made an idea about Monday. And so, you know, he said, my God, that's true. I'm just, my ideas about Monday are my ideas. So he's working on having no feelings whatsoever about Monday, making it a neutral day at least, maybe even a good one. But it seems to me if people understand that they choose how they're going to see anything, and if they understand that we are all basically innocent, then we have the ground set for forgiveness in the Aramaic meaning. But you jumped right to the end zone and did your home run because you're already doing it, and you're doing it so much you're sort of disqualified. You disqualified yourself because you didn't take people through the steps. And I don't know whether it can be written up in a short form.
Yeah, that's why I've been asking for, you know, putting it out there and asking for feedback so that I'm sure that other people are hearing what I'm saying. And, of course, we have that workshop called Communication. Did you hear what I think I said? So.
Yeah, right. Anyway, that's my thought.
So at this point, it looks like probably, and the next time I do that show or any other, it's probably going to be True Aramaic Forgiveness. Is a tool
that
empowers me.
Oh, yeah.
True
okay.
Aramaic Forgiveness
mm-hmm.
is a tool which empowers me to be restored to love
mm-hmm.
and remove any form of suffering, pain, fear, and or hostility, period.
Okay, I'm just going to be devil's advocate.
I think most people have a pretty general agreement on the meanings of most of those words, although, of course, everybody's got a reality note, too. You know, I love the line mm-hmm. we've talked about before from the movie The Accountant. There's a song at the end of the movie that says, you can't read a book you haven't written.
Yeah,
the two
right.
Two of us have got the same brain cells for anything, but trying to simplify it to the point where we can at least get a starting point for folks. So I'm thinking that's probably where it's going to end up.
So, Michael, even then, I was pretending I was a person that hadn't ever heard any of this. My first gut reaction was, bullshit, it's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that awful?
Sure, oh, I understand.
I mean, that was,
no, it's...
Yeah.
That's the Greek programming of the culture. There is no solution.
I know it.
You know, it's just hopeless. It's helpless. You can't figure it out. It's never going to happen. That's the insanity of the programming that comes from kings.
So if you wrote in your definition, and read, would you mind reading it again, yet again?
Oh, I'd sure.
To hear it.
Yeah, I will. So true Aramaic forgiveness is a tool which
okay,
empowers
that's it, right
me to
there.
Be restored to love.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
You did it. The word tool is so important there. It might be passed over too quickly. I mean, mm-hmm. you didn't pass over it too quickly. You really emphasized it. That's terrific. It has to be in there because it isn't like, it's already there, folks. All you have to do is say, yeah, it's there. You have a tool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
So good. I don't have anything more to say about that. Just that you've got a huge challenge because teaching that people are responsible for their own reactions and teaching people that they are basically innocent and that everyone else is, those are two huge things to teach. So.
Yes.
chuckle. Yeah.
But we're making headway on a global scale.
Yeah. Oh, you
so
are.
So that's cool.
You are. You're just trying to package it up in a spearmint gum-sized package where it might have to be a shoebox at least.
Yes. Well, and what I'm ultimately seeing, you know, I'm working, this is working toward a whiteboard presentation. You're familiar with computer whiteboard presentations? You've seen those
yeah.
on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be doing a whiteboard, and this will be kind of the opening of, you know, this is where we're going with forgiveness. And then it's going to parallel mm-hmm. the PowerPoint presentation. And then also I'm planning to step in with just very brief instructions on how to utilize the 7-step wake-up sheet.
Yeah, great. It's great. Is it possible or would it be useful if you started your talk by talking about the universal non-Aramaic forgiveness experience we all have of letting people off the hook, feeling as if you're riding high, you're the superior one, if you're big enough to let somebody off the hook, and how you really haven't let them off the hook because you're still holding this I'm better than them thing, and the whole deal, sort of go into the muck with them for a minute and share the fact that this is our universal experience, and then say, we don't have to do it this way. There is something that is much truer, much more effective, or something like that, and then start your talk about Aramaic forgiveness. You probably will do that anyway because you use the term let off the hook a lot, and that sort of tells us that you know what that's like.
Yeah, we'll often talk about, you know, we're not talking about the Greek idea of forgiveness where I'm taught to blame everybody else. You made me mad, you made me sad, you made me angry, but I'll be big about it. I'll let you off the hook. You know, that's often brought into the conversation, and we'll move into, all right, so here's a tool. Let's get about learning and building the brain cells to declare. And even, you know, you've been around the work for a while, so building the brain cells is a, you know, something you have the brain cells for. But even that, most people don't have the brain cells. Even when you say building the brain cells, what are you talking about? Building brain cells? I'm going to go in and put new pieces of new cells in my brain? You know, I mean, everything has to be unpacked and in order. And, you know, just working to make it as universally available and broadly sensible as possible is, it's an interesting project I've been working on full time for almost 40 years now.
Yeah. How long of a
talk I'm learning.
Going to be? How long is your presentation going to be?
Actually, we're looking at probably about a 35-minute whiteboard presentation that then will be able to be broken down into three pieces. That's kind of where it's at right now. I'm working on the planning stages of there'll be one full one and then probably three where we'll be in parts, so people can just do, you know, maybe a 5 or 7 minute segment, a 15 minute segment, a 12 minute segment, something like that. We're just developing that now.
Getting prices on what that's going to cost. So you don't have all that much time. Say that again. Sorry.
I said we're just developing that now and then looking at, you know, getting prices on what it's going to take to put that together.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, that's pretty short time to teach people about their innocence and about their responsibility, or the flip side being how we deny just about everything and then getting the principle of it across. That's a big assignment for such a short time.
Well, one of the greatest laments that I have over the years of doing this work is how many people refuse to hang around long enough. You know, you came back to the show and came back to the show and came back to the show and questioned and built the brain cells. But how many people just don't do that? They hear it and they go, okay, I got that. That's useless. And off they go. And people will come, you know, I'll see someone who comes and maybe does a 9-day intensive or does 2 9-day intensives. And then they walk away. It's like, okay, I've got my problem resolved now today. And I say, wait, no, you don't have a comprehension of this yet. Please stick with it and give yourself time because you're walking down a road that's going to end up in difficulty. And then 10 years later, I hear from them when they're in, you know, major trauma and major trouble. And you know, at that point, it's hard to say, I tried to get you to stick around long enough to understand it, but, you know.
Boy,
and, you know,
tough.
That's just part of it. And for me, part of it has been, you know, my need, which I've had to cancel 1,000 times, for people to understand it, and then standing in the space of, well, my job is just to deliver it. Whether people get it or not or use it or not, it's totally up to them. I can't be responsible. I can't make that happen. I can only provide as much as I can, and whatever support, you know, that's the effort of this show for the last 8 years has been about how can we support people building the brain cells to comprehend. And and in my experience, it takes the average person really seriously doing their work 5 to 10 years to really comprehend what it is we're talking about.
But
so trying to put it in
two
sentences
things.
An interesting challenge.
Right.
Excuse me.
Oh, it is. Did you see on Facebook that Roma had gave you a wonderful pitch? I forget exactly what she was
Facebook
putting forth.
This morning.
Okay, well, it was sometime yesterday, but I loved it. It was great, and it was right on. And she gave the contact information and you know, gave the ways that people could get in touch and tap in. I think all of us who might be listening now could do something similar, like the person yesterday who was saying, hey, send in a donation. Today I'm saying, put it up on your Facebook and send it to your friends, something that really, really affected you. I put up this morning, I put up your commitment. Is that what you call it? Commitment sheet?
Yes, my commitment.
Yeah, I put that up and said, this could be the best holiday present you ever got, because it'll really undergird and heal a lot in any relationship that isn't in tip-top shape. And your contact information is at the bottom, just the way you printed it. I reformatted it only just to fit better. But anyway, if we could do that, I mean, these are the best things to put up on Facebook. And so if some more of us, we could start being the spreaders of the word. You know, Yeshua was one guy, and you're one guy, and of course you get frustrated. You can't do it all. So,
well, if I get frustrated, I'll be responsible for my.
Oh yeah, I know. I
my
heard
frustration
myself say that.
Do my
I
next
thought, layer. responsible language. Yes. Okay. Well. All right. Well, if anybody else has a hand up about this,
cool.
Go for it, because they might have something to say, too.
Well, I just went to Facebook as we were speaking and read Roma's blurb. Thank you, Roma. That's awesome.
So yeah, isn't that great?
She's put
beautiful,
a link to the site.
It's nicely set up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, very nicely. And anybody that wanted to could probably go and send a friend request to Roma Carlisle, RomaCarlisle, and they could just take it and share it too. Just take that, that particular little piece. In fact,
right.
I'm doing that as we speak.
Good, multitasking. Good.
Cool. All right, young lady. Well, any other thoughts for you?
Well, I have a couple more thoughts, but I thought this is a good thread, and if people want to talk about this, I can save my thoughts. They're not urgent.
Okay. Well, let's check with Ginny and see if there's anything happening in the phone queue or the chat room.
We have one hand up, and it is Miss Roma. 808, you're on
the
air.
Well, let's bring Roma into the conversation. Hey there, young lady.
Okay, great.
I wanted to tell you how that happened. The first thing was I quoted something that you said in the program that really hit home with me, so I just quoted you, and then I wrote my version of the definition of forgiveness. And then underneath what I was writing, I suddenly saw your eyes. And I didn't put that there. I did not put that there. It put itself there. And I thought, Jeannie must have done something. Somebody has done something, and it wasn't me. It just happened. And, you know, ever since the first miracle that happened in September, I noticed that a lot of more miracles are happening. And I just, you know, I'm as I listen to this, I'm wondering, was that another miracle? Because I didn't do that on purpose. In fact, it happened twice.
It is a miracle.
You guys didn't do that? You didn't make some kind of Facebook connection?
Well, it is the miracle of technology. And if you write in whyagain.org then it automatically links. Put that
on Facebook.
So.
Because I wrote it at playagain.org, and then I saw your eyes on my post.
I wondered how you did that, Roma.
I didn't
cool.
do it.
Yeah.
Oh, my
now
God.
Now you know.
Yeah, you know. Thank you. I
See,
mean, I
in
love
the body of your writing, if it's in the body of your writing, you put www.whyagain.org. Wherever
right.
you put that, it will then put that link in. So.
Now, how did that happen? How does
that's
that happen?
That's just how the internet works. That's how the internet works. If you
well,
put
there
a link
we go.
Into a Facebook page, it will put the opening page, the landing page of that site.
We truly are living in miraculous times. We just need to acknowledge
yeah, for
that,
sure.
that we are literally living in a container of miracles all the time. I mean, what? It's not an accident that we just spent the entire year reading from the Course in Miracles. That's not an accident. This is happening because we have said yes to it, and we are open to it, and we are willing to live in it and walk in it with step by step every day, and everything is possible.
Yay.
Yeah.
For sure.
I hope so.
And so one of the ways that anybody can support it is to, as was just suggested, by Miss Susan, is write your experience and put in www.whyagain.org and you'll be linking people. They can go direct to the website and start tapping into how to engage in the forgiveness process. And again, you know, as we had shared yesterday, there's a caller who, and I believe the date was February the 12th or the 17th, that any donations that are made to support the work between now and then, they will double. They will match it, so up to $3,000. So that's pretty cool. And we've got a bunch of infrastructure projects going on at Heartland. We're actually of necessity tearing out the old water system, which if you've been to Heartland, is way down the hill at the pump house and brings water all the way up to the very top of the hill. So that whole piping system has to be replaced and a new underground trench cut into the rock and just all of that. And then, you know, Ken is being an electrician. Ken, who's at Heartland right now, has graciously agreed to start tearing out some of the old ancient wiring at Heartland and putting in new underground wiring so that our electric infrastructure is going to be safer and more reliable. And so there's lots going on with Ken and Linda being at Heartland and the support they're giving us that it's just awesome. And upgrading and taking everything to the next level. So rock and roll. Yay. So did you have some other questions or thoughts, Susan?
I did, yeah.
Go for it.
I have a personal phenomenon. When I go and hear a religious service, and if it's run a certain way, very saccharine preaching or something, I call it my barf threshold. I hope you can hear because it's a hard word to pronounce over the radio. But
I think you tickled somebody's funny bone.
Maybe. I have a paragraph in the page 185 in the Way of Mastery. He's talking about the crucifixion as an image of how we are nailed down. He says, "You turn to look down at your feet. They are crossed over, resting gently upon a small wooden slab with a nail through them, as though the world were saying, 'Don't you dare try to rise above our level of consciousness. How dare you mirror to us the truth of our being by always being so sickeningly loving?'" That's the thing. And I recognize myself as one of those people who gets the barfs when somebody is sickeningly loving. And I don't even really have a question.
I would offer that's an impossibility. My offering would be that's an impossibility. Secretly loving is an oxymoron. That's got nothing to do with love. That's a whole different. That's the world's cheap copy of love. It's not about love at all.
Okay. Well, I have a bar.
You know, you shared with us yesterday.
Yesterday
about, I don't even know how many people, it sounded like it might have been dozens who were there for that young man. There was nothing sickening about that presence of love.
No, it's truly the presence of love.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's that syrupy sweet ego state pretending to be something that it isn't. And I hear you on that. It's definitely a common phenomenon.
Then.
Oh, yes. Oh,
okay.
Yes. Sure.
All
hypocrisy
right.
expressed.
Well, you know, the intent is probably there and everything, but I'm very picky. Anyway, I just was thinking, you know, well, good. I'm glad you said that because I will just relax on that one. I was sort of beating myself up on that one. But the a counterpart of that that I'm going to ask about is years ago when Helen Schuckman was scribing her Course in Miracles, this young man at the time, Ken Wapnick, who's now died, but he was the one that organized her material and got it printed. He worked with Bill Thetford on it.
Right.
We were lucky enough to have Ken come and visit us in New Haven. We had formed a miracles group way back then, before the books, just when the books came out, those three fat tomes. And we got a group of us together. We might have got 12 or 15 people met once a week to read out of the Course in Miracles and discuss what we read and discuss the workbook. And we got so excited because he wanted to come and meet us. And I asked him, I said, what is the toughest thing about putting all this material forth, and for you in your own life as a student of the Course in Miracles? And he said, fatigue, exhaustion. And I don't remember from there what I said, but I feel as if fatigue is, there are times when I go cold. I don't want to do a darn thing. I just want to go to bed or lie down with a lightweight novel or watch a movie or something. And I don't want to be spiritual, and I don't want to be nice, and I don't want to be loving, and I don't want to deal with anybody else. There you go. So there it all is.
There's a great line in the Course.
Yeah.
It says you cannot be tired, but the job of carrying the load, and this is a paraphrase, the job of carrying the load of hostility and fear, no one could make their way through.
Okay, so the reason I'm tired is because I'm carrying a lot of hostility and fear.
There's a load of it.
Right.
I don't know exactly what it is that you're carrying, but, you know, I mean, the only part of us that could say, I want to be loving, you know, when you said, I don't want to be loving, the only part that could say, I want to be loving is a part that is not made of love. It's only the non-being self that would say that. Love is just what it is. It just is.
Oh,
you don't effort it. You don't do it. You don't try it. You don't hope it. You don't. It's not something you do. It's what you are. So when you're living from that, you wouldn't say, I don't want to be loving, because it's got nothing to do with it. You are love, and that's just the way it is. But when we're working out of that self that Yeshua said, pardon me, in order for you to live, you've got to die. That self is a self that holds all the generational patterns that we've come to identify with as who we are, but it's all based in a lie. And that's the load that nobody could possibly carry.
I got you.
Okay.
About. Right. But I don't even know if that's what's operant here. I'm just going to ask you. I mean, we all have bodies. We all are experiencing having bodies. And I know, of course, in miracles, they say they don't exist.
No, nobody's got a body. It's not true. It's a lie.
Well, the lie that I'm experiencing is I get pooped.
Right. Yep. Okay. And you know, sometimes there's a time when you have to just take care of yourself. You just have to get quiet. But I don't think that's to do with the body, because it couldn't possibly have to do with something that doesn't exist. But once again, Yeshua says, you know, in the Course, carrying that load is something nobody can do. But let's go back to one of the basic images, and I assume you've probably watched the video on our YouTube channel that says, what is the world? ACIM, what is the world? And
right.
I use an image there. And so let's bring a man from the jungles of South America. Now, you and I know that when there's an airplane sitting on the tarmac and the propeller's running, what that propeller is a pivot point with four arms spinning around it.
Mm-hmm.
But we bring a man from the jungles of South America, and he looks at it, the prop is already started, and he sees a shiny silver disc.
Mm.
And he lives, relative to airplanes, in a world of shiny silver discs, and that's all he can conceive, and that's all he believes, and he knows that it's true, because he's seen it, he's experienced it.
Mm.
But it's a lie. It isn't true. It's a pivot point with four arms spinning around it. It's something totally different than what his perceptual system feeds him. So recognize that when the Course talks about there's no such thing as a body, we're looking at this, for want of better terms, because we still don't have language about the actuality of the thing, but we're looking at this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. But somebody, when we were little babies, pointed to their noses and said nose and eye and ear and hair and chin and beard and, you know, whiskers and eyebrows and eyes and eyelashes and eyelids. Somebody pointed to all of that, and like the man who lives in the world of shiny silver discs, we're hypnotized into something that isn't true.
Mm.
Even though we have a perceptual system that generates it. Now, where that becomes important is that if the man from the jungles of South America decides he's going to do a behavior based on his mistaken perception that this is a shiny silver disc, like he wants to see what the friction feels like on his fingertips, we would say, stop, no, don't do that, you'll be really sorry. That's not a shiny silver disc. And he says, yes, it is, I see it. But he's living in a perceptual reality that just isn't true. When we talk about bodies, we're living in the same sort of hallucinated perceptual reality that just isn't true. And we don't have words to even start to approximate what this... See what I mean? What are the words? What is this thing? And so,
okay, but
so
taken
it's just
from
to
the
leave
other...
it in the question.
Okay. Leave it in the question. In other words, don't decide what it is or isn't, but just understand that it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Be with it and keep working toward the willingness to be shown and to understand what this device is that we have and how it really works. And as you do that, you know, instead of, oh, my body has a broken part because my great-great-grandfather had that broken part and passed it on to his grandson and his grandson, and here it is passed on to me. I have that broken part, too. Instead of living in that construct, which means I construct myself the same broken part because it's genetically passed on to me and I bought into it, to just gradually work my way out of it. And that's one of those things, you know, I think when they said to Yeshua, how many times do we need to forgive? Is seven enough? And in Aramaic, his reply is 77 times 70. He's saying, no, you're going to do this for a long time to get free of, you know, this hallucination that literally 7.5 billion people are living in. And there will be moments, and I'm saying this from experience, I don't live in a world where I experience directly what this energy field is. When I look at somebody, I still see bodies. But I've had times when the space opened and I could see what it actually was. I have no clue how to describe what it is that I saw, but I've seen it. And I have no clue, you know, when I was there, I knew exactly how it worked. And I have no clue how to talk about that now.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll have openings, and those openings will lead to openings, and you just keep forgiving the faults. And Dr. Tim's got a thought for us. Tim.
So think about how many times you might have heard this. Sometimes in circles, people don't go in the same circles. But Michael does a seminar, not a seminar, but an intensive on intuitive development. And there are people who talk about that they can learn to read auras and to be more sensitive to their emotions. And it's the same kind of thing. Just soften to think about it that way. You know, Einstein said something about how we are, in the world in which we live, we are as cats and dogs in human libraries.
Oh,
right?
God.
We're walking through energies and dimensions that we can't perceive, but it's right here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that we can't ever perceive them. It's that if you step into, we don't know exactly how it's happened, but maybe Michael's onto something. Maybe the language that we were given is a part of how we've learned to perceive. And there's a wonderful short TED talk, there's a longer version of it, where a woman talks about how our language dramatically affects our perception. She says there are tribes where every time they speak, they talk about the directions. And so when they say, you know, where are you going? Oh, a little while to the north-northwest. And they would say, oh, there's a bug on your, you know, southwest foot. So talks in that TED talk about how those people in that culture are extraordinarily well-oriented to the compass directions. And there are other people who are extraordinarily tuned into things like the various aspects of a wet snow, a heavy snow, a light snow, a crust, and it's all about how the language they were taught helps focus their awareness of what's coming through the five senses. And most of us at different times have had experiences of things other than the five senses, whether it's an intuition or, you know, a sense that someone just entered the room because the temperature changed, but nobody else noticed it. So just think of it that way. Instead of
that's good.
You know, instead of holding to the idea that I know I have this body, think about other ways that we talk about developing other capabilities, and see where that leads you.
And then let's
take Yeshua at his word. And here's how he says it. The power of life and death is in our words. That's how far he takes it.
Oh,
if you expect one day to die, the reason will be because of the words you've been taught. If you can forgive in you the words about death, death will never visit you. If you can learn the words of life, you remember he says, my words are your perfect life. I'm giving you the frequencies of how to live as a true human being. And all you have to do is engage in those and forgive the rest. And that's a major project.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major project.
Yeah. Well, you know what's weird? Now, Michael, you were a nutritionist, and I'm sure you still are. But if I have the throw-ups, for instance, I'm really not good for much except making sure I'm near enough to a bucket that I don't mess up the bathroom. It's all animal. It's all animal. And I could, in some little tiny part of my mind, I could say, I don't have a body, and I am not the body. And the other part of me would say, bullshit, as I said before. It's actually a big word for the day. But, you know, right now I am very much of a body. And there's a Hindu story which exemplifies this, such a gorgeous little story about a god who was strutting around in heaven.
And God above that God said, I'm going to send you down to earth as a sow. Maybe I've told this story. So this God incarnated as a sow. And the sow loved being a sow and had her babies and was so preoccupied with feeding and licking and growing up her babies that God tried to get her attention, and she just paid no attention. She just liked being a sow. And so finally the God that was gave her the assignment of being a sow decided that he was going to take it into his own hands and release the sow. He actually slit the sow's throat, and the sow's body fell away, and the soul of this God burst forth out of the body laughing, like, oh, I get it, but while I was in there, I didn't get it, but I get it now. So we're kind of like those sows, more than kind of. Yeah. I am the sow. Yeah, this is really amazing stuff.
It's hard to remember that the objective was to drain the swamp when you're up to your bippy and alligators, right?
Right.
Yeah, yep. And so we acknowledge that we have all of that. And the other, to me, is just to acknowledge the possibility. You know, I proclaim that each of us has the potential to literally be eternal, because my background's in physics, and I know that energy's eternal. So if energy's eternal and there's only energy, we have to be eternal. Now, I know that in all of my generations, because there's nobody in my bloodline that's over, that I know of, that went over 96, my mom was when she passed, that's alive today. So I know that death is well programmed into my genes.
Yeah.
So whether I actually make it or not, you know, I work on an ongoing basis to do that, will be no proof as to whether or not it's true, but energy is eternal. We have to be eternal. And the only reason we won't be eternal is because we engaged in words of death. The power of life and death is in our words. And to give up the words based in hostility, fear, condemnation, gossip, slander, vengeance, hatred, pain, and suffering is to remove those frequencies that cause the eternal energy system to disintegrate into a different form and therefore appear to no longer exist.
Well, is it disintegration, or is it just the order of things that our energy changes form after a while, and that it's going to do that, and it should do that, and it's in the laws of physics, it's programmed to do that?
I wouldn't agree with that at all. It has been programmed to do that, but that's not what it's designed for. That's not its design. Like the sow, we've done that. Oh, this is cool. I like this. And we've forgotten that there's something else to go on. And so the offering is that it is we through a thousand, you know, think back, 30 generations, 1.7 billion people. In those 1.7 billion people, looking back over the last centuries where those 1.7 billion people in your bloodline and my bloodline exist, knowing that in just the last 70 years on planet Earth, we have murdered in excess of 175 million people in war, how many people who were alive during all of that do you suppose went, oh, this is a horrible place, this is hopeless, terrible, painful, traumatic, and then think back about those 1.7 billion people and what they came through? There's some pretty heavy-duty disintegrative mind energy. Am I willing to face all of that? You know, step two in the reality management wake-up sheet. Am I willing to face and process out every disease-producing energy for and from all of my generations or my relations? Am I willing to wake up out of the desert and rid myself of the generation so I can truly live as a human being? That's the challenge. And the clock, that other fantasy that we have, is running out, and it's telling we've got 10 seconds, so I'm going to say, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessing. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.